Hello and welcome to the Trauma Resonance Resilience Podcast. And I'm your host, Lisa Cherry, and I've got another very, very exciting podcast for you today. I have such a special guest for lots of different reasons. So this person, their main research interest is in the area of digitalization and professional education, but in particular in social work education and how that socializes and equips students for practice in an emergent and complex digital social world. She's got the most amazing research projects. They include an examination of the contribution of social work education to the preparedness of students for practice in the connected age, navigating digital content for children in out-of-home care, the design and development of a wearable device to help to reduce drug deaths in high-risk populations in Northern Ireland, and a youth co-research project designed to test out activism as a mental health intervention for young people. Endless other things I could say about this person, but I'm going to let some of the conversation do the talking. Please let me welcome the wonderful Dr. Amanda Taylor-Bezick.
Thank you so much, Lisa. What a lovely introduction.
Oh, listen, it's, do you know what? What's really nice about doing this podcast, there's a few things. One of them is that you've just left social work.
Today is my last day.
Oh, my God. So we're totally going to get into that because you've had such an extensive career. And the other thing that makes this really special is that many, many years ago, long before anyone had any understanding really about digitalization of social work education in any form, I came to visit you at UCLan, and you were amazing because it was my first edition of Brightness of Stars, and we were live on Twitter with several other universities. Now, let's picture the scene. It's about 2013 or something like that. No one is in this space yet at all. You were so ahead of the game. And we sat there watching this live conversation between five universities all tweeting about my book, which was amazing because I'd kind of written it as a healing kind of experience at the time. And you were just so ahead of the game, really.
Social work book group was an incredible experience for me. It has been, continues to be. Like, we had a couple during the pandemic, but I do remember that one particularly. And I remember because it was the first one where we had brought in various different types of schools and disciplines. So the education was there, social work was there, psychology was there. We had some colleagues in the US, I don't know if you remember, there on screen, who were really interested in the book and what we're going to talk about, because, you know, regardless of the methodology, it was much more about the content, and this book had really captured people's attentions. And we did, I think, I can't remember the technology, I want to say it was Adobe Stream or something. So we did sort of live, you know, fumble our way through streaming these things, and they did work fairly smoothly. So there was a nice recording of it. And then this idea of connecting people using Twitter as a way to be able to share voices. And we had student tweets in all the different rooms, and they were sharing information, and people were getting involved on the hashtag and this sort of thing. And it was, I remember you were interviewed by afterwards about the method by, I want to say it was a student leader or somebody that was leading sort of in student experience at university. And I think regardless of kind of what had went on, everybody always seemed to leave social work book group going, wow, that was just brilliant to be able to connect with people all over the world and share this book, which I still, it's in my bookshelf just in front of me, I can see it. I've just brought my books back from Ireland because I've just moved from Queens back to England again. And it was a remarkable experience for me for a very different reason. One, that you came as the author of a book. It was a very live experience. Right across, you know, whilst it was mediated through the technology, it was very live in terms of you read out from the book and you said this one thing when you finished reading, you read this particular section, and it never has left me, and I still use it in my teaching today. You said, asked out to, you know, the people in the room and online, do you think you know me after reading this book? And a couple of people said, well, it's sort of yes, kind of thing. And you said, never mistake listening to somebody's story or reading somebody's story and thinking that you know them, because it's just a sort of a snapshot of their lives. And the second thing that really stuck with me was, and again, I still use this as an example in my teaching, was the part when you talked about food and the relationship to food and how, as a young person, enter in a space where you were offered choice, which is supposed to be a real positive thing, but was actually very overwhelming in terms of what is this about? What does this even mean? Those are the things that really stuck with me. So it's funny that for you, stuck the digital experience. Those were the things that the real human interaction in that space. So having you there with your work, you know, was really, for me, really important, but also to share that right across a larger community and connect together across, as you say, 5-6 different universities. And I think actually, we had a colleague who used to come at Bev's Kitchen was involved as well at that time. And people would go there. And I remember meeting a group of social workers in a coffee shop one morning when I was around about doing things somewhere around the south of England. And I looked at them and I thought, they're doing something I recognise. And I wasn't sure what it was. And they had the book. And I said, I'm really sorry to interrupt your reading or whatever, your conversation. I'm really curious about what you're doing. And they were saying, oh, we're social workers. We have a book group. And we're reading The Brightness of Stars. And I was like, ah, I don't know, like, this is where technologies connect us in a really helpful way. That was the time where I think I was thinking about technologies in a more kind of exploiting the affordances instead of being so consumed by the perils of kind of the digital world. You know, that was kind of, it was in a more, had a more romanticized kind of experience of technologies or digital technologies in that time. But it was remarkable. And I remember we went to have dinner after that in a local hotel, and we had such a brilliant conversation. And that was kind of it in terms of your work entering social work education for me, and my job to make sure other people had access it to experience it in the way we had, really.
Well, that's amazing. And again, that's amazing because it's just about to come out as third edition, and everything that's in it has got a reflection piece. So that nearly 10 years that's passed, I've been able to sort of reflect on that, and all the writers have done a reflection piece, because I know it's amazing. It's that opportunity to look at your writing and go, wow, I'm not there anymore. That's not what, you know, I ponder about or think about. And I think about this, and looking at writing as healing. So yeah, really good. And I will make sure you get a copy.
Wonderful.
Yes, you'll love it, because I think it's got that lovely longitudinal kind of basis about it, around healing and around the journey that we go on, all of us, in moving through. But I'm really curious about the kind of resistance that I don't know that you, I've never asked you this, but I'm guessing because you're one of those people that I always feel was ahead of the game. And, you know, there's a lot of us about, we've been chipping away at various things that are sort of coming to the fore, and you kind of go, I knew it was going to come soon. And, you know, I see you very much as one of those people. But my hunch would be that you experienced resistance around digitization for all sorts of reasons, really, to do with social work and the way we practice and confidentiality and all those kind of things that are just imminent issues today that we're grappling with. But I wonder, was that the case? Did you experience resistance?
Well, I was some of that resistance in various ways as well. So I kind of need to claim that, you know, I do have this story that I tell when I'm trying to convince people of potentialities of digital technologies in the professional role, be that in education or practice, where that I was, I think, the last person, along with the head of school at that time, Joe Cunningham in UCLan, to mark online. You know, we still, like, you know, I actually found a photograph up the other day, and I've still got a pencil pot on my desk and a sharpener. I just love that whole physical experience of writing on scripts and, you know, sharing narrative with students, asking questions in that way. It was how I kind of learned to mark and give feedback and all the rest of it. And the whole school had moved on like dramatically. In fact, the university was moving on dramatically in terms of this method. And I still was asking, please, I'm not going to be able to do this. I really want to do it in this different way. And Joe and I were the last people to be ordered then to say, no more, you're not printing these scripts out anymore. You don't have that luxury. You need to learn. So I too claim sort of some of that resistance, because I think people think that, you know, I sort of set myself up of not, you know, just going along with this and using all technologies. And whilst I am a bit of a gadget, I do like gadgets, I do also love humans and the physical world. And I don't think we need to lose any of that. It doesn't need to be a sort of, we're going to lose all that because of this. Mm-hmm. Find balance in sort of all things. But, you know, when I came to social work education in 2009, I was using very clunky technologies to stay in touch with people in Northern Ireland, because I'd moved away from my home and my family and my friends. I literally knew one person or two people, I think, in England. And I was thinking, this is completely, there's real culture shock for me in terms of, you know, space and location and all those sorts of things. And I really needed the feel. I used to go onto YouTube and listen to Irish music much more than I ever had in my whole life, just to feel a sense of belonging, a sense of home and tetheredness. So I started to use sort of technologies in that way to keep in contact with people in my life who would tether me to still having a sense of belonging. And then I noticed really quickly that, you know, there are some potentials for this to be used in education. And I have various stories I could tell about people saying, you know, stop with all this innovation, you know, it's all about, you know, fancy technologies. And for me, it wasn't. It was much more about, wow, we can really connect together with people and information. It was much more with people. If you think about the brightness of stars that evening, how many people were in the room? It was a packed room, but there were packed rooms all over the world kind of thing on that evening, all connecting together through this technology, you know, which is a really, now we talk about Twitter, it's just, you know, so embedded into our lives. It's like our telephones, isn't it, really? It's where we connect with a professional group rather than lifting the phone. You know, you're always in contact, sharing information. And there was resistance around that sort of thing. It was more, and I used to get really angstful about that idea, because I don't agree with technologies in terms of shiny and new. If that's shiny, it's new. Oh, let's use this. I would like to think I was much more critical about the technologies. But what I did see was that there was a way to connect students and me and everyone else with knowledge and people who were creating knowledge or had knowledge to share or information to share that was really useful to us reflecting and thinking about how we do our jobs. And that went, you know, right across the piece. And actually that resistance was still around. I was employed in the Queen's University Belfast. I think it was about 16 or 18 weeks before the pandemic hit. None of us knew what was coming. And they employed me for my digital expertise. That was on the brief, and I saw it and I thought, shall I just, you know, go back to Ireland for a while? Digital expertise, this sounds right up my street. It's back to Queens. It's sort of where I've come from. And I remember spending those sort of 18 weeks trying to convince people that we had a conversation to have regardless of their research area. So I was saying, you know, things like, you know, I'd be interested to learn about your research area because mine is digital. And what I'm really wanting to do at the moment in this job anyway is see, sort of work at those intersections between your research area and my digital. And that's when you spoke about the wearables project. That's how that came about. The project with Mandy McDonald about digital safe spaces for young people, experience, you know, people out of home care, you know, there's various terms. I'm always really concerned that I don't get the term right, because these areas that I'm moving into, whilst I know about them as a social worker, I was bringing the digital to those spaces. So the digital safe spaces work has been great, and we're just about to put a paper out on that. So I was trying to convince people that there was these connections, and some people were starting to work around these areas, but still there was still resistance. I remember speaking to one colleague, I'll not name, and I said, look, you know, I've just arrived. This is my research area. I'm really interested to talk to you. One about teaching and learning methods, but also then about your research area. And, you know, they were saying, look, it's really, this doesn't fit, you know, and actually you need to be clear that in Northern Ireland, we won't be going all digital in our teaching and learning methods, you know. So I just sat with those sorts of things, as I have done, and tried to find other ways to say, you know, we really need to think about this. And I can't own that that's my kind of ahead of the game type thinking, because I met Jackie Rafferty, and I think this is a pretty well-known story. Well, in my head it is, in my Twitter feed, because I always refer to it, and that's out of complete respect from the knowledge and work that was done before me. But I met her at a conference. It was Jane Sweck. I want to say it was 2010. It was in Manchester. And she was getting told off for tweeting in a seminar, live tweeting this information on the hashtag. And amazing. I remember feeling like I was like a magnet to her, you know, that was it. Pure Jackie, ever since, and I mean, even till today, I still lean on her a lot in terms of a reflective space. Her, Walter Lamondola, Brian Glastonbury, there's a whole raft of people from the founders of Hasida who, you know, started this kind of work a way, way back. And I still fairly much, you know, lean on them as a reflective space. But so the resistance has been ongoing, and some people have come on the journey, and some people, other people were doing work in that space, you know, before me. But the thing that I think that always caused me concern was that we weren't engaged enough, but we also weren't critical enough about the spaces. So thankfully, I never used Facebook as a place to take students or to encourage students to go. I encouraged them to be critical about it and think about it in terms of professional boundaries. But I certainly didn't agree. And that was a real sort of tension for me with other people who were studying social work in this sort of area or using that method. And I don't, obviously, you know, Twitter's not perfect either, but it was a different sort of, I felt a different space to work in. So going back to the question about resistance, it's been ever thus. And actually my new role, you know, is going into digital transformation in higher education. And a lot of that is about convincing people about the potentialities while keeping an eye on the pearls or difficulties around new and big technologies today. So working with that resistance, it hasn't felt easy. It's never felt comfortable. And I've always felt that not an outsider as such, but I was coming from an angle that people were, you know, going back to people like Jackie's work who cite, you know, I want to work with humans, not technologies or computers, you know, that I used that in my doctoral work to think about people's resistance. So it's on, and I can see what I understand why. I get why, and I also get why, because social work is about doing with, I think, not doing to. So if you've got a value base of that nature, which we should have, social work have had a very difficult, troublesome relationship with technology, because a lot of the time technologies have been done to social work, not with it. I'm not sure I've ever met a social work practitioner who has said to me, I've been involved in the commissioning of the information system that we now use in practice. And in fact, I have a slide that I did give a talk in Trinity in Dublin a couple of weeks ago. And I used that slide, and it was, you know, very recent community care articles that, you know, pictures of computers and practitioners saying about the problems that computers cause them. And, you know, I would say, well, it's not the computer that is the problem. It is how it's rolled out. It's the new managerialism where computers are concerned, and how they've become surveillance for practitioners as well. So they're laborious. They don't fit the task. And also then it becomes this, you know, this idea, you rock up to supervision and it's what the computer says you haven't done, rather than you having a critical conversation about the work you're involved in. And that's how it was when I was a practitioner. You know, I don't remember it ever being, here's all the red dots where you haven't done anything and they're done picking things. So I think that idea has really exacerbated that notion of, you know, I want to work with people, not computers. And it continues on. And some of the new systems that are being brought in continue to be commissioned by people that don't have to use them.
I think that tension that you're raising is really interesting, and how that creates a barrier. for people. And some of the other things, and I want to get into that in terms of thinking about the pandemic, but some of the other things that I just wanted to make reference to was actually what you were saying was, we want more connection. We can have more connection. And the book group facilitated, and as you say, with the author in the room, people are getting the connection and the experience, and also the connection with other thinkers, other ways of thinking about things and looking at things. And I think that was very clever and misunderstood perhaps as being more human connection rather than less. And I was also thinking about the very idea that you would be told off for tweeting in a conference in 2022 is fascinating. I mean, generally speaking, you're provided with, or you gift to people, a hashtag by which to make sure there is lots of noise about your conference. And I think that's a really interesting marker of the shift that we've taken. And I'm going to get us into the pandemic, because I think when we're thinking about digitalization, it's so important. Because when I started I've worked online for years and years. I've been self-employed for a long time, and I've taken myself on that journey, and I had to learn how to build my own websites and all that kind of stuff, and really enjoyed it. But when the pandemic hit and people started saying, can you work online? I was like, yeah. There were other colleagues who were saying, no, that's never going to happen, who now won't come offline, which is really interesting. And there were, what really struck me, what I was really surprised by, and I work with all professions, this isn't just social workers, this is across every sector, was that not one sector employer had taken their staff on a digital journey. And so, I mean, and people were amazing. They learned so quickly. They were so amazing. But those first few meetings online, I mean, I ended up doing videos on how to use Zoom, you know, like, and not how to press buttons, which was a problem in itself. And as me and you discovered this morning, remains a problem for anybody using anything. But more how to use it in a way that keeps you safe, how to use it appropriately, how to show up on it. How do you show up on one of the platforms like this? Now, as I say, we have traveled. Oh, my word, have we traveled? But that was a real surprise to me. And I wonder what you thought about that, really. Do you think that was deliberate? Or do you think it was just not seen as important? Or why do you think that people were not taken on that journey until the pandemic and there was no choice and everyone's back was up against the wall?
I think so. My experience of that is disparate, because since about, I guess, 2013, I had sort of spent my sort of CPD contribution from a social work education point of view, going around local authorities, doing work around digital professionalism, digital capabilities, digital knowledge, all those sorts of things, digital ethics. But it's interesting, because it was, can you come in? Can you give a talk? Can you leave? And it was almost like, can you come in? Can you read the Riot Act? And can you leave? So there was no real depth to it. You know, it was a funding issue. It was, people didn't realize, I think, the importance of it or whatever. You know, and I always refer back. In fact, I have this book that sits on my bookshelf, or my book, it sits on my desk actually all the time. It's The Integrity of Intelligence. It was written by Brian Glastonbury and Walter Lamandola. Brian's a UK academic and Walter in the US. It's 1992. And in it is a Bill of Rights for the Information Age. Now, they're social work academics, social workers, through and through, like us, social workers. And I always get amazed that people talking about, we really need to tune into all the, you know, this idea of a Bill of Rights. We need privacy laws. We need regulation. It's all in there. It's 1992. I didn't see it when I was a social work practitioner or a student or wherever. I'd not come across it. It was when I met Jackie that I knew that I really needed to catch up. And I had years of catching up to do because I see their first conference was in 1987.
Wow.
What I've always really struggled with is how did that literature not enter into social work academia why was it not more present? Why did I not hear about it? Why were other people not hearing about it? I've still never been able to really figure that out. And actually, we have an email group where we still converse together. And Jackie brought me into that a few years ago, and I've just been so grateful for that space to be able to talk to those colleagues. And we've had that conversation over and over again that social work's often so consumed with so many things that it needs to sort out and work with across the social world. This was almost like one step too far. And I was reading some literature recently that was talking about that, you know, we always talk about we should future-proof and future plan. And I just can't remember the name of the researcher. Hopefully it'll come to my mind. But this researcher was talking about, we don't need to do that. We need to not talk about the present and the future. We need to talk about past the future now. We need to forecast much further into the future, way beyond the future. Like if you think about 1992, you know, the Orwell stuff and, you know, what is now coming to fruition. If you look at that, one good example of this is Years and Years. If you watch that documentary or program online, I think it was 6 weeks. I can't remember how many weeks it was, but that's a really good example of looking ahead and looking beyond. And I think that these academics were beyond, these social workers were beyond what we could ever have imagined at that time. And if I've been talking about it in this period of time and other colleagues too, you know, it still wasn't engaged with in a way that we could have went into the pandemic feeling really confident. We went in a complete crisis mode and we crisis responded like we do as social workers and practitioners. And I think
that's an interesting mirror, actually, isn't it? That's a really interesting mirror.
Yeah, that's how I kind of, that's how I worked with it in terms of, you know, because basically I'd been in Queens for that short period of time. And the head of school did write a piece, you know, on this in terms of not appreciating how I would need to work and what I would need to do. And that, you know, it was almost like, be careful what you wish for, Amanda. That was the when they basically gave the direction. I just come back here to keynote at a conference at UConn where I used to work on sort of the future of digital education. And we went into lockdown when I was here that week, and I didn't go back to Ireland then for, I can't remember how long it was now that we were in lockdown, but it was a long time. But my brief was to get us online. You were rewriting programs. You were finishing the end of the second semester of that year and then getting ready for the next semester where we'd still be in lockdown, working with people who had never been online, who, you know, experienced that resistance in lots of ways, understandably. So practitioners, it was students, it was academics. It was getting the program rescheduled. It was getting people familiar. It was huge, an epic task. But I remember thinking, I remember when I got the call to say, you need to do this. This is what you need to do. This is the brief. And I remember it was sitting outside in the garden and I thought, this is a crisis response. I need to think about this in a crisis way and I need to look at this systemically. I went straight into social work practice, systemic practice, looking at all the systems, thinking about how I could be relational in the space so that I was supporting people, not overwhelming people, but at the same time, bringing them along in this crisis response. And that's sort of how I took that on. And it was all the reading that I'd done, all the thinking I'd done around all this work that these social work academics had done. You know, I was just saying that last week when I spoke in Dublin or the week before, that in regards to my reading and what the information I have, there was two female academics in 1950 and 1966, Eileen Blakely and Ida Oswald, I think the other woman was called, who were talking about using technologies in social work. And one was, well, Mary Richmond in 1911 was encouraging social workers to use the telephone. You know, that the old, you know, you lift it up and you dial the number. So, you know, there is a trajectory here. So that set starts in 1911 with Mary Richmond saying social workers really need to get on board with using the telephone.
You know, we always stand on the shoulders of giants, Amanda.
There's always people. I remember book group, actually, the very final book group that we did was using Olive Stevenson's book, A Life in Social Work, which is just, it's the most moving kind of, read in terms of, for me, a social worker really reflect on their lives and how we should go forward and all those sorts of things and those patterns repeating themselves. And June Thoburn came along and she was there. Harry was there, Harry Ferguson was there, and Aidan Worsley. And it turned out, it was a lovely thing that happened, actually. It was two things that happened. One was that each one of them, so Olive had supervised June. June had supervised Harry, and I think Aidan. And Harry had finished a part of Olive's book because Olive obviously got poorly and then passed. And again, that just demonstrated, here we are, we're in a space where there's book groups going on all over the universe kind of thing in social work. And we're talking about this, there's the lineage almost, you know, and there's a lineage for every kind of research area. And I think from what I have found out in my reading, I'm sure there's lots of gaps in it, there will be, because there is so much literature in this space. It's phenomenal. You know, you're just like, oh my goodness, where am I going? I remember when I started my doctoral work and think, right, that's it. From now, these next 3 years, I can do nothing but read this stuff. I will read this like religiously, you know, I'm going to have to go through this really carefully. And I know I've still got gaps because every so often I'll get in touch with Jackie and I'll be moaning, you know, I do moan to her a lot. I'll say, oh, this problem, you know, and she'll go, have you read? I'll send you it, you know, and I'm like.
That interconnectedness, that's what you're describing to me. It's the interconnectedness. It's this, you know, and what's so beautiful actually is that June and Harry are both among the reviewers of the third edition Brightness of Stars.
Oh, that's really nice.
I mean, talk about circles and threads, you know, just how we all kind of connect up again. And, you know, sometimes those threads just hang and they don't meet up with anything else, like the tendrils in our brain. But you know, most things have this beautiful cyclical nature. And, you know, that's just so powerful. That's just so powerful and sits so beautifully in that sense of interconnectedness.
The other thing that June shared that night, so I thought I was the Oprah Winfrey of social work, you know, book kind of thing, right? And I love it when I'm not things, you know, I'm equally as comfortable with that. And June started to talk about how that, there's a video actually, I tweeted it the other day because she'd said something and I said, do you remember doing this? And she did this video about it, but she was telling us that Olive Stevenson would walk her students around the area of the university that they, I can't remember which one it was, and I want to say it was London, but she would get them to read fiction and then they would walk around various places, but geography, you know, like. And then they would talk about people in their circumstances, have that experience. So she was very much into what I'm into, experiential learning. You're really learning from experience. Bringing students as close as possible. Because I think that's what I missed in my social work education, going as close as possible as I could to having the experience with another person. So she explained that they would do that, you know, and I, you know, obviously, you know, stood up and said that, you know, this is wonderful, you know, that she did this. I didn't even realize, you know, and that's why I at that time was thinking this is even more important that we use and exploit these technologies for social good, because these connections that we're making, you know, if you think I know you and you're there and I know I can reach out to you, we have a relationship, we're not in each other's pockets, but there's so many people that I have met through social work book group and Twitter and those relationships that I would have met, like Laurel for my social work virtual pal, you know, that's, you know, Laurel and I now have a long-standing, you know, professional relationship based on a hashtag, as you mentioned. We just happened to be on the same hashtag one evening, and then we started to meet on Skype just once a month, really, and off went to do bits and pieces of work, and, you know, I know she's there kind of thing. And you could argue that we would meet people through conferences and things like that in the you know, in a more analog world, but not, I'm not sure that it's the same at all.
It's not the same. Listen, I travel all over the place, not just in this country, I have to say, and across all the four nations of this country, there is nowhere that I would go where I'm not invited out for dinner or to somebody's department or somebody's team or for coffee. I am never, ever alone anywhere in the country. And I do work hard on my relationships online. Yeah. And I do make sure that that connection, and sometimes it's very exhausting. There's a lot of people to be connected to, but it's always felt very important to me. And, you know, I get that back in buckets of love. And, you know, that to me is what it's all about. It's about connection and, you know, making those really quite profound and important and deep links online that we know eventually at some point are going to result in us sitting down and having a cup of coffee, or what we might say, breaking bread together, you know?
Yes.
And that for me is what it's all about. But I'm going to take us into the final kind of question, really, and ask you, what is the future? What, you know, you're saying to me, we need to go beyond the future. So in your mind, what are you thinking are the things that either the profession needs to focus on, or the social work education academic space needs to focus on, practice needs to focus on? You know, what is it that you think is next, really?
I think we're in a really useful liminal space. I don't think we've gone through that kind of the troublesomeness of technologies. And I think we have moved beyond, and it came up in my doctoral research, we've moved beyond thinking about digital and social work as a reducing it down to a set of technical skills. It's much more than that. It is and will go on to shape and affect people's lives, and usually the people that social workers will go on to work with, in ways that we will struggle to imagine. We have struggled to imagine, so therefore I'm assuming we'll continue to struggle to imagine the interconnectedness of our data profile, for an example. You know, so there's me and you, and we're the Amanda and Lisa that, you know, it's a very physical entity that you know and can recount, that I know and can recount. But there is a whole other Amanda and Lisa that neither of us can recount, because we don't know where it exists or how it exists or who creating it, but it is being created. We know that much, our data profile. And I think we really need to be thinking about that as a profession. We need to find a way. I think from a professional regulator point of view, I think all of the regulators across the four nations, the world, including Ireland, need to really work on the sets of professional standards around the digital. And I think, you know, as my doctoral research, and that was from a student point of view, a student perspective on this whole area of digital development. And I've been very led by that study, because whilst it is a small study, it was really deep in terms of, and granular in terms of, student experience of a lack of digital development. And whilst there was a set of standards around the digital, what I knew as an academic was, I am not supporting students develop digitally, and I'm not well enough anyway. I'm doing some things, but it's not good enough. Blended learning, throwing something on a Blackboard space or a VLS, is not digital development. And I knew that, and I had some hunches around that, but I wasn't sure about the depth of it. And when I got into the depth of that, I was really, really taken aback. Really, I was really worried, actually. I was worried because basically what I was doing was, are we signing off students without them meeting these standards? And if we are, that is a huge issue that we really need to think about. So I think from a regulator point of view, we do need some regulatory levers around digital development and social work education and practice, social work and social care. And that needs to cut through all areas of the curriculum, and it needs to happen quickly. And as you said, and you made the point, you know, that resistance disappeared when we did their crisis response. In terms of the people that we serve, this is a crisis response. We do need to still remain in that crisis kind of response in terms of upskilling and upskilling quickly, both around skills but also knowledge. Because people are being redlined across the country, and we don't even know kind of to tell them about what is happening to them. You know, do we even know? Do we really know what is happening just because we're online and we're clicking and committing to whatever it is, and we're inadvertently creating these data profiles of ourselves that will influence, you know, health care, welfare, all those sorts of things to come. There is no doubt in my mind. It's been happening. If you look at Virginia Eubank's work and her own experience through her Automating Inequalities book, you know, that should be on social work. Like I say, The Brightness of Stars needs to be on your reading list. This needs to be on your reading list. Automating Inequalities, Race After Technology, The Age of Surveillance Capitalism, The Integrity of Intelligence, they need to be on our reading lists. If, for example, you're teaching communication skills and you're not teaching about screen relations, Gillian Isaac's work, or mediated communication like this is, you know, you're not teaching communication in the 21st century. Mm. You need to really quickly upskill. I know we're not teaching about GDPR compliance or data protection or information technologies in that way in our law modules. I just say take everything, the whole curriculum, and there needs to be a digital running through everything. We need to analyse all the content. Now, the resistance, going back to that idea of resistance, the resistance to that is there's too much to teach. But actually what we're missing is that the fact is the information is at the end of everybody's fingertips. There's a lot of stuff that we're teaching that's very accessible and can be learned in a self-directed way without us having to teach that. Actually, we need to be co-creating spaces where we really thrash out criticality around all these issues that we're having. So communication skills, that's just one. Human growth and development. You know, I had my granddaughter, I remember at 18 months having this, she was 18 months old, my second granddaughter, and she took my phone off me. It was about the third or fourth time I'd met her. She lives in Ireland, I live here. And she took my phone, she shoved it to me, you know, and indicated that she wanted me to unlock it. I unlocked it. And she started to go through like YouTube. She was trying to find Peppa Pig, you know, and she was saying, you know, she wanted to watch Peppa Pig. And she was able to work out. And I was looking at her and I was thinking, hang on, in human growth and development, am I teaching this stuff? Am I teaching the fact if you go in and do an assessment, for an example, in a family home and all the kids are online and all the kids are able to navigate around, are you seeing that as a fine motor skill in terms of Mary Sheridan's kind of fine major motor skills? Are you seeing that as this child is developing really well, or are you seeing, oh, they're far too much on the screen, they're babysit by their technologies, which is like, are we having those kind of thoughts to ourselves? Because I think things like growth and development have changed.
Socialization. I agree. I absolutely agree.
Young people's socialization in the world has changed. Our parenting has changed. And whilst if we're going into those homes with our own experiences of the past, we can't be assessing in present terms because so much has changed and so much has changed so rapidly. I think the curriculum needs a huge overhaul.
Every sector. I mean, I have this exact same conversation in education settings.
Yeah,
you know, we have to change because it's changed. You know, we're on the back foot here. And I guess just to add to your thoughts around that, yesterday I was in a long meeting with lovely colleague Kath Nibbs, and we were really focusing and thinking about the next stage on from what you're talking about. How are we having these conversations even about our motor skills, you know, and our development and how that impacts our development? But then also from there on, how are we thinking about the kind of safeguarding issues around online harms, cyber trauma, to coin Kath's phrase, and those kind of things? We are just not there yet, but it's coming, and you have been a fundamental part of that conversation, and that is a very wonderful way for you to leave one space and move into another. And I have loved talking to you, and I knew that we could probably talk for a very long time. So thank you so much.
Awesome, pleasure. Your final day in social work, to talk about social work and your interest in technologies is just, it's, it feels like a real luxury, actually, to me. And I'm really hoping that I hope I still have some, I've still got a few people asking, will you come and do some masterclasses around this stuff? We're still really struggling. So I might still do bits and bobs, but I really do hope that the regulators across the four or five nations, across the globe, sort of, you know, think about we are sending people into practice, and it's the world. We know how hard the world is. We're then punishing them if they can't do their job well enough and fast enough, their huge caseloads or whatever. But we need to equip them to exploit technologies in their work and their professional practices, but also for social good. You know, we need to be careful that we are not contributing to these data profiles that are problematic for people, that you find that you apply for a job and you're excluded because of your culture, your race, your gender, whatever it might be, your sexuality or whatever it is. The point is that the rapidity that we made the shift, that crisis response, we could continue that. We've got a window of opportunity, I think, here where we could really kind of redraft. And whilst it will take a bit of work, I don't think we can rely on previous practice methods or education the way it was. The point that you make about educators, you know, we're not educating educators to teach our children in the way that our children need to be taught, so that they too can fit in the world in a way that is responsive to them. So how we go forward, I think, is we need to continue with a big, massive redraft. And I know everybody's exhausted and I know everybody's worn out. We all are. But I think we need to breathe into that and get on with that, because I think it's really important, given the state of the social world, that we do, you know, and keep connecting together, you know, keep connecting.
Always. Connection is everything. Thank you so much. Everyone's going to love this. It's so rich.
Thank you so much for inviting me, Lisa.